How can a child have three genetic parents? I'm not talking about two parents and a surrogate or two mothers and a sperm donor creating half siblings. I mean one baby carrying the DNA of three people, three parents. Well, it's complicated and it might involve the crossing of a scientific Rubicon, but it's a concept that has found approval in the UK. Talk about science communicators. Professor John Rasko is top of the picks when it comes to them. He's head of the Department of Cell and Molecular Therapies at Sydney's Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, and he's one of the world's leading authorities on genetics and stem cells. He's also happily our regular commentator on all things biomedical. John Rasko, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks so much, Fran.
At the mention of children with three parents, I imagine some groups heading to the barricades over the laws of nature, all the ethics. It's an ethical minefield. We're not talking about children for polygamous families, are we? What are we talking about,
John? No, this is not a rerun of the American television series Sister Wives or Big Love. This is actually three genetic parents. In other words, three people who've contributed their genetic material that's going to be inherited in their offspring.
So we're talking about mitochondrial diseases. This is where it comes from. Tell us, what are mitochondria? And then tell us about the mitochondrial diseases.
Well, first of all, I have to congratulate you. Even at this early stage of the morning, five-syllable words is a real challenge.
Oh, so I'm warmed up.
Mitochondria, I know you
are,
friend.
I've been here for hours, John.
I'm well aware. I've been listening. So these mitochondria, what are they? I thought we might do a little thought experiment. Picture in our mind what it looks like, what a mitochondria looks like. So if you can imagine a hen's egg, that's the shape of a cell in all of our bodies. And within a hen's egg, there's the shell, which is the outer membrane of the cell. And within that is the yellow part, which is the nucleus. That stores the information of all of our cells. That's where the DNA is predominantly located, some 25,000 genes. But in the white stuff, there's a lot of the doing parts of the cell. And if you could imagine some little orange pip-sized objects in the hen's egg, they would be the mitochondria.
In the white stuff?
In the white stuff of all of our cells. And they can vary from, say, a few or a few dozen to up to several thousand in liver cells, for example. So they vary enormously from cell to cell, but their function is universal in cells, and it is to provide the power of the cells. They are the batteries of all of our cells. They generate energy. And in doing so, they are essential for life. It is indeed the case that they appear to have formed some millions of years ago when a cell with a nucleus actually swallowed or engulfed a bacteria. And then they co-evolved so that this cell within a cell, if you like, became codependent, and that all of the mitochondria in our bodies are distinct because the DNA in those mitochondria are quite separate and separately inherited from our nuclear DNA.
And in theory will stay that way forevermore because they're passed on unchanged from mother to child, as I understand it in my slim knowledge of this. So what is a mitochondrial disease?
So you're absolutely right. The crucial point here is that the mitochondrial DNA is inherited only through the maternal lineage, only from women to women. So we talk about the mitochondrial Eve, a theoretical woman who lived perhaps 100,000 years ago and who has got a linear descendant to every woman on this planet. It's non-Mendelian genetics. In other words, the inheritance of these mitochondrial DNAs, there's only 37 genes compared to the 25,000 genes, but these mitochondrial genes are inherited just through the maternal lineage, a unique situation, and it would have upset our old friend Mendel with his pea growing and
but
so on.
But does that mean my mitochondria might be the same as Madeline? Are there in the control room or any other woman in this building?
Indeed, that you can trace the lineage back to an original woman back about 100, give or take, 1,000 years ago.
So what's mitochondrial disease?
So mitochondrial diseases, of course. Mitochondrial disease is a series of some more than 200 different diseases, and it couldn't be better explained than by my good mate David Thorburn down in Melbourne.
There's about 60 children born each year in Australia with mitochondrial disease. That's the minimum number we can document. In terms of how it affects them, mitochondrial diseases can affect any organ system, causing almost any symptom. So at the severe end, that's children dying in the first days of life. Many of the children present in early childhood with neurological symptoms, developmental regression, seizures and other features. And then there are milder onset in later childhood and adulthood with things as mild, I guess, as exercise intolerance.
That's Professor David Thorburn from the Murdoch Children's Research Institute. So this is where the three-parent baby comes in. It's an attempt to prevent mitochondrial disease being passed on from the mother. What happens?
Exactly. So it's not preventing it in the person who may be suffering from mitochondrial disease, but in a future generation who might...
To head it off in the future.
A person who might inherit that mitochondrial disorder. And as you can hear, they're very, very serious in some situations, but sometimes it's very difficult to predict whether that inheritance can occur. And so this is a very sophisticated IVF technology, in vitro fertilization. So all of the activity is done outside of a woman's body, and essentially it divides into two parts, whether or not the cells are fertilized, the egg cells are fertilized before the mitochondria are introduced or after the mitochondria are introduced. And believe it or not, that actually itself creates ethical problems for some groups of the community, the order in which it's in which this technology is applied. But it's like a cure for mitochondrial diseases one generation later. Essentially, the cells are introduced into a donor egg. So, sorry, a fertilized cell is introduced into a donor cell, which is an egg itself, and those mitochondria are normal. So there has to be a third person, a woman, who donates an egg and who has normal mitochondria in that egg. Her nucleus is removed, the yellow of our old hen egg example is removed, and then the fertilized center part, the nucleus, that DNA from the mother and the father carrying the 25,000 genes is introduced into that donor.
The fertilized nucleus comes from the mother and the father,
yes,
but the foreign mitochondria is introduced, the white stuff, from a third person.
Absolutely correct. You've got it in one. That's it, Fran.
So what's the ethical question here? Is it about, as you say, it's fixed, mitochondria is fixed, about intervening in the future makeup of, well, altering the course, really, of...
Certainly this opens up a whole bunch of ethical questions, doesn't it? I mean, people talk about crossing the Rubicon, a dividing line between the germline, because here we're talking about issues of consent and agreement. How can an individual consent to a medical technology when they haven't even been born yet? That's the bottom line, because this changing of the mitochondria to a different donor mitochondria obviously presents enormous ethical questions, and that's been at issue for over a decade in the UK, which last year the Houses of Parliament passed legislation to allow this technology, so-called mitochondrial replacement technology, for serious diseases to be introduced. And in the United States, only recently, it looks like that may be passed as well.
Okay, so it's heading our way, this debate.
The debate's certainly here and heading our way, but the technology hasn't reached Australia yet.
John, it's fantastic to talk to you. Thank you. No one can explain mitochondria like that. Thank you very much for joining us.
Most welcome.
Professor John Rasko, head of the Department of Cell and Molecular Therapies at Sydney's Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, and our regular commentator on genetics and stem cells.